Good evening. Welcome back to the program. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. What if Earth's ancient sites hold the key to interdimensional travel? Tonight, I'm joined by my guest, Mike Ricksecker, to explore Stargates, stone circles, and Earth's energy hotspots, from legends of Atlantis to symbols of lost civilizations. This hour, we're going to take you on an eye-opening journey into the mysteries of our connected universe. Mike's brand new book is called Portals to the Stars, Inside Stargates, Atlantis, and Secrets of Ancient Egypt. We have a link for Mike and his book on today's program guide, so you'll find it there. Now joining me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Mike Ricksecker. Mike, thanks again for being here this evening, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me back, Dave. Always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend.
Yeah, it's great speaking with you. I love the passion that you put into this, and that you're not just a guy who sits behind a computer doing research. You're boots on the ground. You are traveling the world like a modern-day Indiana Jones, looking into these sites, seeing these places for yourself, investigating the claims, and trying to separate fact from fiction. And as we jump into this next segment, talking about some of these cultures and lost civilizations and the civilizations that exist that seem to have keys and elements that point us to the fact that some of these other things that we've thought might be nothing more than fables and myths might actually be showing much more. When we talk about things like Lemuria or Atlantis, you know, those seem to land in the land of make-believe to many people. But there are indicators around the world that there are these different cultures that did at one time exist, and point to these bits of history and where we came from.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically with Atlantis, and I know, many people out there believe that it was just a story that Plato told. But the story actually doesn't come from Plato. I mean, that's where we have our written account of it. But the story predates him. He got it, or it was passed down to him through Solon. And Solon, around 600 BC, had gone to Egypt to the temples at Thace and Heliopolis, and got the stories from the ancient Egyptians. Now, the ancient Egyptians didn't call it Atlantis. Their culture called it the homeland of the primeval ones. And we actually find a part of the Atlantis story there on the walls at the Temple of Edfu. It's not the entire story because there's only so much wall space that they had, but it is a part of that story. And so when we have this account from Plato, we have to keep that in mind, that there's a decidedly Greek slant to it. And he even states within the text that, hey, their goddess Neith is our goddess Athena and those sorts of things. So you have to keep that sort of context in mind. But it is a story of this era of a lost civilization that we find permeating throughout cultures all over the world. So many different cultures talk about a great flood or a great cataclysm, and you had these survivors, and that's the Atlantis story. That's the story of the primeval ones there in Egypt. Something happened in our distant past.
Now, it's not so hard to believe because, look, every year we're finding new things. We're uncovering new findings of civilizations that are buried underneath the oceans, right? And that they did exist. And we know that the world has changed its structure, right? That we have split apart, we've combined, we've done all these different things. So there are different areas that have been lost to us, maybe visually and to the oral histories. But there are these fragments of information that do seem to still tell the stories, or at least try to keep them alive in some way, shape, or form. When we talk about Atlantis being this great civilization that was so far advanced and had all these technologies, again, it sounds very far-fetched to most people. It sounds like, well, if they were so far advanced, how did they get wiped off the planet? And where are the remnants of this? Why are there not people that are still around that remember or, know the traditions and history behind it? Like you said, there's been so many genocides, so many places that have been taken over violently and aggressively or have been lost in cataclysmic events, that there may be no time to save some of these areas.
Yeah, when you're talking about the massive destruction of your entire civilization, this was a cataclysm that affected the entire world, because we do find that story everywhere. This is this is something that, again, we have to keep in context of the things that would have happened. So, okay, an entire civilization gets wiped out. The survivors go on to tell the stories, and there are certain places where we have the story that's been passed down through, you know, whether it's oral tradition. We even find those stories here in America. Our indigenous tribes talk about the Great Cataclysm as well, just in their context. So we know something happened, and yeah, there's the debate as to, okay, where was Atlantis? Where did the survivors go? And we see different types of architecture and different symbolism across the world that I think is a memory that harkens back to that civilization. Like you have the Nuraghi at Sardinia, those very circular type castles and structures that, you know, when we think of the classic Atlantis story, that ringed capital city kind of harkens back to that. Or the symbol of the spiral, which I believe has a double meaning. You know, the ancients talk about the spiral being a symbol for portals, but I believe it's also a memory, the spirals in the concentric circle, of Atlantis, this place where they came from, and they are recognizing that in their artwork.
I'm fascinated by the idea that there are all of these lost cultures, but that what I think is interesting is that different cultures in different parts of the world seem to know about these cultures, even though they were separated. Do you believe that there were survivors that just broke off and became, you know, Aztec, Mayan, Egyptian, whatever the different aspects might be, and each one holds different elements of the stories, and we just haven't combined them yet into one cohesive understanding?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about survivors, so, you know, let's take the classic story of it was an island, and it was destroyed by fire and water was submerged. Those peoples that survived, I mean, they're basically going to get scattered across the earth, or at least their particular region. If this happened in many locations around the globe, you're going to have people going in all sorts of directions, finding, you know, what's the closest piece of land that's stable that I can find. And so somebody may go to the north, somebody may go to the east. You know, it's just, where do these small groups end up? And they're each going to, of course, retell the story. But over time, sure, there'll be some changes to it. Maybe, you know, there'll be some different cultural context, or, you know, the language might change and these sorts of things.
We have to take a quick break. Mike Ricksecker, our guest this evening. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the hidden wisdom behind a lot of the ancient symbolism that we do find at different locations, ones that do seem to tell a story, a cohesive story, but broken from different people's perspectives, because I find that an interesting element towards this, right? I mean, even in the case of Christianity, there are many archetypal characters that come long before Jesus Christ that tell similar stories of virgin births and sacrifice and deaths, you know, with these central figures, and have been told time and time again. It's interesting. Are we seeing just one story told from many different perspectives, or have we lived these lives over and over again? And are we facing an extinction point that will just reboot the earth like a cosmic etch-a-sketch that we need to reorchestrate and a new architect to rebuild? We'll talk more with Mike Ricksecker right after this. Welcome back to the program. Your home for the very best in paranormal talk radio is right here on WCCO every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Mike Ricksecker, my guest tonight on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. All right, Mike, going into the concepts of the wisdom behind so many of the different ancient symbols that are seen around the world, as you said, many of them tell similar stories. Even taking a look at the Christ story, there have been multiple versions of it told through time and tide, right? And are we just looking at one story, but from different perspectives, different elements, and everybody's just attributing different names and times to them because we did lose our way in keeping the tradition of oral and written history?
Well, in some ways it seems so. I mean, like you said, you know, we see in a lot of these, you know, the virgin birth, that we see a resurrection and ascension and these sorts of things. You know, there's sacrifices sacrifices that are made. So it does seem in a lot of cases there is, one basic story that keeps getting retold again and again. And same thing with the Cataclysm story. So it all seems to really go hand in hand. There's some, origin culture that we are all from, that this story has been disseminated down through thousands and thousands of years.
I'm curious, with the AI that we have now, I know we're able to break codes and we're able to look at these things. Do you know, have they ever worked on, or is anybody working on feeding the information into AI from all these different cultures to see where these things line up and if maybe they're able to tell a more cohesive story? Are they, are there coordinates? Are there bits of information that we in the current era might be missing?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's doing that. I know that they're using artificial intelligence to do things like, feeding in ancient Sumerian tablets and things like this to kind of expedite the research that we've been doing there to make that process much quicker for us. Yeah, that would be interesting to see and look at if anybody's created some sort of model using those sorts of stories. But I know that there have been plenty of people, authors and researchers that have talked about a lot of those correlations between whether it was the flood story or the way that these different gods from cultures all over the world have like a similar function, like Enki in ancient Sumer is essentially Thoth in ancient Egypt is Quetzalcoatl there in Mesoamerica. It's basically the same entity, same function. It's just a different name for that person.
I know this will probably sound ridiculous to even ask, Mike, but just to clarify for listeners around the world, Atlantis seems to have two different versions of what it once was. Was it a great and powerful city and civilization that was on Earth, that was ground level and then sunk at some point? Or was it believed that it was always an underwater civilization that has existed? I mean, we talk about USOs, the unidentified submersible objects and things that have been seen and witnessed under our waters since the beginning of our tradition of travel. What do you believe Atlantis was? Was it always an underwater civilization, or was it above ground at one point and sunk?
No, it was above ground. And that's what our, again, the stories that we have from Plato, and then you look at the Egyptian stories, and these were, so with the story as written by Plato, this was a civilization that spread across a sizable portion of the earth. Now, it had the capital city, that famous ringed city, that was the kind of focal point of their culture, but they had colonies that spread out, and there were 10 basically states for that, each with their own rulers, and they had kind of a centralized government. Now, there was something that happened within that civilization where they, as the story goes, they angered the gods. And unfortunately, the story is a bit incomplete. It's in the Timaeus and Critias. And we get a glimpse of, in the Timaeus, kind of a generalization of what happened to their culture. And the Critias starts to break that down in a very detailed fashion. And then it just stops. We don't know if that text has been lost to time or if Plato just stopped writing it. He was writing it toward the end of his lifetime, so he just may never have gotten a chance to finish it before he passed away. But this was a civilization that was above ground, and there was some sort of catastrophe that happened.
The reason I bring that up as well is I know, and I've seen some more recent stories on this, believing that maybe at one point Egypt was Atlantis, because there's proof that there are underwater crustacean and sea life fossils that are found on the pyramids themselves, which means that at some point they were underwater. However, I'm wondering if it's just the stones themselves that were unearthed and then used to build it, that had the fossils as a part of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're made of limestone. And so limestone is a sedimentary rock, and you will find, the seashells and things like that within the blocks that were used to create the pyramids, because It's limestone. So that's just kind of the nature of the rock. But Egypt was part of the whole civilization of Atlantis. You know, Atlantis did spread out. It was one of the colonies. So there are those direct ties. And again, we find those texts there at Edfu describing that entire story. So yeah, it was a part of Atlantis at one time. It didn't have the capital city. I think that's what everybody's really trying to find is, you know, where was that famous ringed capital city? Because we know that the civilization did spread out across a good chunk of the world.
Do you think that there is any proof that maybe the Atlanteans were not indigenous to this planet to begin with, and they did their work and left, and that it wasn't not necessarily a catastrophic thing that wiped them out, but their own, look at humanity's kind of a brutal, you know, brutal group of people. Let's go somewhere else. This is, you know, it was a great place to visit, but I don't want to live here.
Yeah, so you have stories of like the Shining Ones and the Seven Sages and these sorts of things, the Anunnaki, and there's a lot of debate as to, you know, whether they may still be amongst us, whether they integrated with us, maybe they just, like you said, maybe they left the planet, this sort of thing. So it's hard to know precisely what happened, but as far as you know, they not necessarily being indigenous to our planet. Well, humans might not be indigenous to this planet. We could have very well come from somewhere else. Maybe there's another planet in this solar system, and things happen there. A lot of people kind of point to Mars as possibly being that location. And we came here as a method of survival, and everything just reset. It's something that we are going to have to do at some point, whether it's happened to us before or not, because this planet that we're on right now, even though it's not going to be for, you know, another 5 billion years, but this planet will not always be here. So for the human race to survive, we will have to, you know, figure out how to traverse the cosmos and recolonize somewhere.
I love the concept of all of this. I love the fascinating elements of, you know, the mysteries that are still there to be, you know, found and discovered. But at this point, do you think that we're ever going to really find the true answers to these elements? Because it almost feels like in the 21st century, we've explored so much. We've seen so much. How is it that there could be something that was that big and revolutionary that has left no trace?
Yeah, it's something that we're going to find buried deep within the earth. And it seems like the more that we keep excavating and, you know, it's I post a lot of this sort of stuff to my social media. It seems like there's not a week or two that doesn't go by in which you hear some story or find some story of they were digging a new road somewhere and all of a sudden they unearthed this town or the cemetery or these lost artifacts that they had no idea once existed. You know, they were doing this in the San Diego area some years back, putting in a new road and discovered, you know, some mastodon bones there with humans. And you know, they dated this stuff back like 120,000 years, which totally blew the paradigm away for dating human activity here in this part of the world. So we're always discovering new things. And I really think the smoking gun is going to be Antarctica. So much. I mean, the ice there is miles thick. And we know at least that there was an ancient jungle on that land from the ice core samples that they've brought up. But it would not surprise me if some of those missing technologies from the ancients are buried under that ice.
And they're finding more and more with LIDAR searches where they're uncovering right in plain view civilizations, structures that we've overlooked because of the dense forestry that's around it. And when we come back, I'll find out, are they doing any radar looks at Antarctica to see if there are structures, if there are, you know, proof of civilizations that may have existed there? And what is your take on the strange way that the world handles Antarctica. Nobody's allowed to claim it. Nobody's allowed to, you know, there are so many different laws and ideas behind it coming from all the different cultures. Makes it seem like there is something that's being hidden. We'll talk more about that when we return. Mike Ricksecker, our guest right here on the Paranormal 360. If you love mysteries, if you love history, then you will absolutely love Mike Ricksecker. Check out Mike's books on Amazon.com or check out his website. We have a link for it on today's program guide. Mike has written on just about every topic, and he is a man that goes deep into the understanding, breaking down the stories and trying to separate fact from fiction, giving us those concepts. What do you think about the LIDAR situation, the fact that we are constantly unveiling new places throughout jungle civilizations? Have we done any LIDAR work, or can it be done with the Antarctica area?
Yeah, what they've been able to unveil in, like, the Amazon has been fantastic because, you know, there were those stories from the first Europeans that came over that said, oh, there are all these cities and magnificent structures throughout that area of the world that, because they brought the smallpox with them, absolutely decimated those areas. And then, you know, they kind of just fell to ruin because everybody died. But we're discovering that, you know, the stories were true, that they were actually there. And that's
which is
really,
exciting.
Really amazing.
Right?
Yeah,
because,
it is. It
because
is.
You're proving that things like Atlantis may exist. We may eventually find that answer because we're still finding in 2024, you know, into the 21st century, civilizations that were talked about have been considered legend and folklore and now are being revealed as actual spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just amazes me how this seems to be very, very repetitive over time. You know, like the city of Troy for hundreds and hundreds of years. Troy was considered a myth, a fable. You know, it was one of those, you know, Greek stories that was passed down through time. And so, no, Troy never existed. Well, then in the late 1800s, sure enough, they found the city of Troy. You know, for such a long time, the establishment said, no, it didn't exist. And so, so it amazes me how, you know, the established academia remains so stubborn over some of these other ideas that, you know, it has to take, you know, some, you know, magnificent piece of technology like LIDAR to say, no, the stories were actually true. You know, I think we should just give more credence to the stories to begin with, and then we won't have so much red tape to get through here.
Well, we've dealt with a very strange element throughout our history, right? We don't want to upset the apple cart when it comes to the Christianity religion, the belief systems. You know, we will throw the baby out with the bathwater if it doesn't fit the narrative that we want our history and civilizations to live up to. And anybody that doesn't fit into those realms is kind of a heathen and a pagan or whatever. They're all kind of cast aside. But it's interesting that we've kind of gone away from that, and we're starting to find more and more elements that actually back the biblical references. We're finding more and more elements that many different civilizations populized, or populated the earth. And it's okay that many things can coexist at once, and it doesn't mean that any other thing is less important.
Well, I definitely agree with you, and it's interesting because I have found that it seems like modern science and academia almost takes a similar approach to what the church used to do. So, you know, when the church was more in power, if you heard voices, if you bilocated, if you levitated, all these different things, if you were a clergy member of the church, it was okay because that was of God. But if you were not part of the church, then, you know, you were practicing witchcraft. You might find yourself hung or burned at the stake. And it seems like a lot of the modern science and academia is doing the same thing. Instead of burning people at the stake, they're burning people in mass media. Like, you know, the work that Graham Hancock is doing is absolutely fascinating. And, you know, you find this certain sect of modern academia that is trying to absolutely torch him, but yet he goes out there and he finds the evidence, and it's like, you know, this is actually proving the stories.
Science has a way of cutting their nose off to spite their face. Instead of realizing, I mean, there's a reason we call medicine the practice of medicine, because we're constantly learning and altering and changing the perspectives of what we believe or what we believed in the past. And we're even finding in some forms that, right, even going back to what we thought was archaic ways, leeches actually are a great way to help people that are dealing with amputations or having things reaffixed to them to help blood circulation. So for a while we've discarded it, saying, "Oh, that was old, you know, dark black method of thinking, and you know, this isn't really good science." And now we find out that a lot of it is good science, and that there are reasons that people did those things even in the past, that there is a kernel of truth and an understanding. And we're kind of in that position, it seems to me, where we just don't want to always accept what doesn't make sense to us. And instead of being open-minded and allowing us to maybe open evolutionary doors at a much more rapid pace, we just keep holding ourselves back with wanting to tie it to old belief systems.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating because humanity has a propensity to hold itself back. That you have a lot of these ideas and concepts that people want to try or revisit from the ancient past. We know the ancients were onto something. What was it? And we just have this really strange propensity to hold ourselves back from taking that next step. And we talked about Tesla earlier, kind of the same thing where, he was laughed out of the room for a lot of his ideas and concepts. And we actually have that technology today. He introduced the first drone. He was talking about, wireless technology, which we have today, all these different things. It's strange how humanity tends to work like that over the years.
Right. Even radio, right? Often attributed to Marconi, but Tesla had
Tesla.
Right.
Marconi was using Tesla's technology, and it was finally after Tesla died that they finally actually awarded that designation to him rather than Marconi, although it was still in the school books that it was Marconi. But you look at that, and actually I do talk a little bit about this in the book. With Tesla, he had such a huge grand vision. Marconi using Tesla technology was showing investors, look, I can broadcast from the shore to a ship, and we can have some communication from the land out into the water. And those businessmen and those investors, they could see that. They could see the smaller application of it. And Tesla sitting there like, that's nothing. That's chump change. We're going the globe. I can make this happen across the world. And those other men, they just couldn't see that vision. It was too big for them. But sure enough, we have it now.
Well, we even look, if my understanding is correct, even in modern science, now we're looking at things like the Lost Ark, right, of the Covenant, that the way that it was created and what it was may have been more of a technological breakthrough. Either something that worked like a battery or perhaps a radio in its time.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ideas surrounding that. And when we go to ancient Egypt, so the Lost Ark of the Covenant was basically based on the Egyptian Ark. So the Egyptians had arks too, and it was kind of that similar concept that these arks were used to hold some sort of battery or power source or these sorts of things. And they were held within the temple to help with the energy of those temples. And it's not surprising that we actually find the Stargate symbolism at these particular temples as well.
When you look through the history books and you look at what's been uncovered, it is interesting to keep in mind that things like Alexander the Great, the things that were written about him, the stories that we know, aren't really things that were written about him at the time. It's mostly written hundreds of years after his demise from things that people were able to piece together. So we're wrong about a lot of the history we think we know already. So we shouldn't be so ignorant to the fact of, well, that doesn't line up with my paradigm or my understanding of civilization or our history. We're constantly showing that there are flaws in the way that we pass information from one generation to another.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. History is definitely broken. It's, whatever's been passed down by the victors. So when we uncover different artifacts and maybe a building or whatever it is, trying to put that into the context of the history that we think we know can be very, very challenging, because you're right. It's whatever's been written down and passed down and may not have been written down at that particular time. So, how accurate might it be? I mean, it's we talked Atlantis. Well, and I understand that, you know, there were a few hundred years there between Plato and Solon, and Solon got it from the guys there in Egypt. But even those priests were saying, look, this event happened 9,000 years ago. So, you know, how much of that story did change over the years from, 9,600 BC to the time that it came to Solon, that it came to Plato, till, you know, we have what we do today.
Well, and if they did find a way, and portals or stargates have always existed, maybe there was a way, like the chronovisor, which I know is something that, and you and I have talked time travel before, right? There was a belief that the church had created something called the chronovisor that allowed people to witness history and see things. And, you know, there's some leanings that make it sound like this was very legit, but then there's other elements that make it sound like this is something that was wild, fantasy, and just created by somebody who was trying to gain attention. But in there lies maybe a little bit of truth on both sides, right? And if these type of technology existed back then, maybe Plato was seeing through a portal, seeing through a wormhole or a stargate to see what the past was like, and without being able to interrupt or disrupt it, but allowing him to see through to know these things and get that information. Because again, if it predates him by that far, how would he get that information? And why isn't there a more telling oral or written tradition of these cases other than Plato and a few other, you know, scattered people?
Well, and that's where we try to connect it to other sources. And that's why I always go back to, okay, the text there at Edfu, talking about the homeland of the primeval ones. It's talking about a time of creation, and basically these original peoples, the what they call the primeval ones, were destroyed by water and fire. Their land was sunk under the water, just like Atlantis. So it's essentially another version of that story. So we have to look at some other sources like that and try to piece it together. And the chronovisor is an interesting idea. Or, you know, even there in Egypt, they talk about when they would go into these stargate chambers, they would ingest these white cakes. And there's a lot of ideas behind that. These cakes had the element, the monatomic white gold, that was put into these cakes. And you see the depiction there of, you know, these offerings and ingesting this as you are about to go in there. Well, did that change? What did that do to change the person as they went into that chamber? Was it changing their genetic makeup? Was it changing their frequency to be able to go into these chambers and see things, experiencing things? Maybe it did create a way for them to enter into another dimension or to transport themselves across the cosmos. Or maybe it had an effect like ayahuasca, where they, you know, physically were still there, but they were having visions and interacting with other beings and this sort of thing.
Agreed. Fascinating. We have to take our final break for the show. We will be back with Mike Ricksecker on the Paranormal 360 right after this. We're back. This is the Paranormal 360. And if you love the supernatural, the paranormal, and all things strange, you can join me here every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on News Talk 830 WCCO. And if you're listening on the Odyssey app, you can find my weekly podcast, The Paranormal 60. It's also on the Odyssey app, The Paranormal 60. And there are new episodes that come out of that show every Tuesday and Thursday. But when you subscribe, you get the entire network. You get 6 days worth of shows, all paranormal and true crime related. I hope you'll check it out. Mike Ricksecker, our guest on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We have been talking tonight about portals to the stars, inside stargates, Atlantis, and secrets of ancient Egypt. That is the name of the new book by Mike Ricksecker. We have a link for that on today's program guide, so you can keep up with Mike and see what he's up to. Mike, I know the time's going to get away from us quick here. We have about 5 minutes left together. What do you want? Which direction do you want to go to leave our listeners with this evening before we wrap up?
Oh, Dave, there's so many different places we could go, but we could wrap it up with Egypt, because that is, you know, really for me the cradle of all of this. It's we see a lot of that ancient architecture there, that, you know, whether it's the pyramids or maybe the Osirion, that is those structures that are devoid of the hieroglyphs. Because the dynastic Egyptians, they covered all of their temples with those hieroglyphs all over. But yet you have these other structures in Egypt that just don't have any. And so, I mean, it might be a controversial theory, but many people believe that those structures actually predated the Egyptians, that they were part of that pre-Diluvian Atlantean culture that became repurposed again when the survivors resettled.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess that is another way to look at it, right? That if it predates it, there wouldn't be the same kind of histories and stories that are put on it. Or in a lot of instances, when new leadership would come and take over areas, they were also apt to erase the histories of the past, right? Kings have done that. So could it have been that at some point there was engravings? And I wonder if we did any kind of deep penetrating radar or look at them, would we be able to maybe find hieroglyphs that have been lost to either sandstorms or, the chisel that had removed some of these bits of the histories?
Yeah, you do have things like that happen where there's so much, like you said, you know, sandstorms or just, you know, decay to time. I mean, it's stone, so, you know, that's why it's lasted so long. But, you know, there is wear and tear on some of these things as well. But we know that there are, like with the Osirion, what we're looking at is just the very top of a structure that goes much, much deeper. So, you know, what's hidden under there? There's so much that we still have yet to discover. And
right. Wasn't it just like a week or two ago, they discovered a whole new burial system right near the Great Pyramid?
Yeah, there's another, layer, so to speak, that's over there on the Giza Plateau. They keep discovering so many more tunnel systems. Whether it's another necropolis or just other structures. And that was one of the things was, yeah, there's a structure. We don't really know what it is, but it kind of has this design. And, there's so much there yet to uncover. We do see that there's a distinct difference between these different eras. And like you said, we know that there's also an erasing of that history, like the King's List at Abydos, which is one of the biggest king's list that we have from Egypt. It's one of the most ornate. It does not have Akhenaten on there. Tutankhamun's not on there. You have some of the more famous kings that we know of today, but includes kings that we know nothing about whatsoever. So you find those interesting discrepancies.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us tonight and spending some time here, opening up minds, giving people a way to look at things differently. I always appreciate our visits, buddy.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks again for having me back, Dave. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend.
Yeah, and you can get the book, Portals to the Stars, Mike Ricksecker, the author. And folks, here's something to consider. Engage your children in interesting ways to make them maybe have a hunger for history. Without closing their minds, allow them to hear these strange and alternate belief systems that are out there. Because you may be helping to raise the next Indiana Jones, the next true discoverer of these magical, mystical places, and be able to look at them. I think when we get closed-minded and we find ourselves attached to one set of beliefs, it gets harder to stray from them. And we find ourselves in a rut. Whereas if we open our minds and we allow ourselves to see beyond the scope of the things that we believe already exist and allow ourselves to believe that there may be more to the magic in the world around us, that's when the true exploration and the true findings will begin to reveal themselves. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending some time here. Thank you to my producer, Jonathan Lowe. Thank you for tuning in and being a part of the program. I will be back again here next Sunday with you right here on the home for the very best in paranormal discussions. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is my Paranormal 360.